All right, well, I think pretty much everybody in here knows this, but, you know, for those that may be online that may not, I'm Ben, this is Lindsay, in case there was any confusion there on that part. Next month I'll be 34, the ripe old age of 34. I was born and raised here, born in Springdale, raised here in Fayetteville by, I think, the two greatest parents anybody could ever have. I know there's people that would argue with that. Everybody's parents are great to them, right? But it really was, they really are just incredibly special people, and I get more into that in a second. But as far as currently, I am no matter how many people I speak in front of with the military or the fire department, I always get a little nervous when I get up here somewhere. You know, I don't know what it is. It just is what it is. But I do got to say on what Mitch said earlier, about looking forward to that day. It's not just an age thing, you know, especially in my job. Can you hear me? No? Okay. To get centered. I'm sorry, am I centered? Okay. I get a little distracted, too, also, in case somebody throws a little red light over there, I'll swirl after it. But... Yeah, you know, I just gotta say, as far as, you know, looking forward to the day, as Brother Mitch was talking about, that's not just an age thing. That's just the more you see this crazy world doing what it's doing, and especially I'm a firefighter, and I run on crazy people all the time. And you just start thinking more and more, Lord, you know, I like my job, but I think I'd much rather be with you right now. So I'm a lieutenant. I was supposed to be a captain about a year and a half ago, as it's in the mail, as they say. So hopefully I'll be a captain sometime soon in the military with field artillery out of Fort Chaffee in the Arkansas Army National Guard. I've been there for, this November will be 16 years. I'm a firefighter in Fayetteville. I've been there a little over 4 years. I've gotten to do all kinds of cool stuff. Right now I'm at the hazmat station, so I'm what they call the glow worms. We get to go play in the glowing puddles of goop. I love it. It's you never know what you're going to run into. And the great thing about that job is if it's really bad, you won't be around to know about it, so, you know, unfortunately, most of our job is medical stuff, and because there's a lot of sick and hurting people out there, and, of course, we know in here that on my little EMT level, I know about this much. I can stabilize you until the other people get there, like Kendall and other nurse practitioners and stuff, when we get into them, they can really help them out, but we know that the person that can really help you the most is the great physician. But basically the first half of this, I had, I'm number 5 out of 6 kids out of the Kovach family. Like I said, most of y'all, this is just something y'all already know, but I'll run through it real quick anyway. Raised here in Mission Boulevard and got to go to this amazing school right behind us, Fable Christian School. As I said, I had a wonderful mother and father. There was a couple of different things I highlighted about them. So they were very involved. We had stuff. I remember growing up every Sunday at a minimum, and actually probably more days than that. My brain's a little foggy. As we would always have family devotions, we would sit down as a family, all 8 of us, as hard as that is to make happen. And Father would pull open that enormous Bible of his, and we would go through a devotion on Sunday before the devotion. And some mornings, you know, especially as a teen, you're like, I'm about to get this in church. Do we really have to do this right now? But, you know, he would do it every morning anyway. And even when he was feeling bad, he always had a lesson to teach. He always, and the thing that really hit me too, especially, was my dad would always, like, man, Dad, you really did a good job on this framing thing or this, that, and the other. And he's like, well, you know, that was all God, Benjamin. He did that. And I'm like, well, you can take a little bit of credit just for yourself, you know, a little bit. But he'd never do it. He'd never do it. He's always, it's like, well, yep, God was the reason that nail hit where it was supposed to. And that's really a spirit in this church in general. I mean, we have many amazing men, one of them right here in front. You know, I really appreciate Brother Mitch, and more so now as an adult, you know. Mom had a special unique role, too, and it's really dying out a lot in this world, is she was a stay-at-home mom. This world, especially with feminists, and we've had many conversations about this, is constantly pushing women to, oh, get out there. You're not accomplished unless you have a job. You're not accomplished unless you do this. You're not, you know, and on it goes. And to that, I like to reference Titus 2, 2 through 8. I won't read the whole thing here, but y'all know the passage, being keepers at home. You know, God put that in there specifically, not to diminish any ladies out there in the workforce right now, but it's like your first duty is to take care of those children. And if mom had been out there like, well, dad's down and out, he's sick, I've got to get out there, I've got to work full time, we got to put the kids in daycare. I mean, I had a hard enough time as a teen as it was, much less if she had done something like that. So she really overcame and showed that you can do things the old traditional way. And as Peter was pointing out, perspective, you know, it's mom was one of the few over on this side when all these other ladies out in our world today are trying to push for the next bigger, better thing and try to make themselves equal with men. And it's like the beauty of God's creation is women aren't equal with men. They have their own job, you know. And so mom and dad, I just had to say that about them because they did such a good job kind of modeling that. But we were always supervised. That mom and dad always emphasized a love and respect for this man right here, our pastor. No matter what, you know what? They may have had disagreements with him, and I know we all, you know, I think probably just about any of us in here at this point have had something we didn't agree with on pastor, but you know what? We never saw that as kids from mom and dad. Never, ever do I remember hearing them say, oh, pastor did this. I can't believe he did this, you know? They always would turn to us and say, you love and respect your pastor because God put him there. So take that for what you will there, but we're always lovingly corrected. I remember a time out of the cabin. I was trying to help dad out. I don't even know how old I was, maybe 5 or 6, something like that. And I had found some little earmuffs, and I put them over my head, and I got a little saw, and man, I was going to town. The only problem was I was going to town on this cabin railing that he had just put there. And so to this day, unless they've changed that railing, that cabin in Holiday Island has a notch in it from where I was sawing. And all I know is I got grabbed, you know, softly, not firmly there, you know, but, and dad pulled the headphone off. He's like, no, not right there. Here, let's go find something you can cut, you know? And he could have handled that so differently. He could have flown off the rails. He could have smacked me across the head, you know. He could have reacted in any one of a bunch of different ways. But that man didn't. That man is just, no matter what we did, I tell you, I don't remember a time really ever that he just flew off the rails at us. And considering his upbringing, that's divine intervention is what that is. That's a man that loves God. So I was, the actual salvation part was pretty simple and straightforward. You know, I was about 8 years old. I got a hold of the little track back there, one of the little chick tracks. It's one way. It has the little hand on it doing this. And it just says one way. It doesn't have a lot of words in it. It just has a bunch of pictures. And these kids go through this line and they see these pictures of Jesus. And then it shows them at the end dying on the cross. And that's when it hits them, just from these pictures. Like, this track has words at the very end. That's it. It's just this. And that, as a very visually oriented individual, I saw that and the blood falling on them and washing their little stinky flies away that they had all around them. And that's what hit me as a kid. Like, wow, I'm one of these little stinky fly covered kids. You know, and that, so it was at the age of 8 on the couch there at the house with that little simple track that I ended up getting saved. And it was about a year later I was baptized and been a member here ever since. More or less, unfortunately, you know, the military's pulled me away for stuff. But it basically with the between then and now, there's a few little hiccups, you know, I won't go into the details, but you know, I did as a teen fall into some struggles, and then even throughout my 20s, really, it kind of was a little roller coaster. God would pull me out of something, and I'd sink right back into something else, you know. And so I looked at that, and for this, I was like, well, what can I share up there that's not just, well, I messed this up. Okay, have a nice day. And I was like, well, it really, people have asked me all the time, well, how did you come back? What did God do to bring you back? Or how can we as, you know, parents deal with a teen boy that's doing this, that, or the other? I've been asked that in the past. And I'm like, well, you know, like I think back with my parents, honestly, I don't know if there's a thing they could have done different. They showed me a good example, which is the most important thing, I think, you know, right beside constantly being in the scriptures. You know, don't just be a parent that, you know, goes in your room. It's good to have your little war room for people that have seen that movie, you know, to go in and pray and read your Bible, but let them see you do it. You know, let them see you out there praying. Let them see you out there reading the scriptures. There's supposed Christian households I'd been in that had never prayed as a family before, never read scriptures as a family before, and that's really just a travesty. I found myself as a child, like I said, I can't really blame my parents for anything, especially when we stand before God, it wouldn't do me any good anyway. But what I found out about myself was I tend to justify things. And I don't remember, I think Miss Rachel still has a letter I wrote from basic training, one of those times when God really got a hold of me and turned me around. And it's just, you know, when you get some moments of clarity, you realize, well, you know, God, I'm going to just step over here and this isn't really bad. This is kind of okay. So I'm going to stay right here, but I'm not going to go over here. So I'm still fine. You know, and you just, it's amazing how fast you get from here to here, you know, and really it all boils down to what each of us have to admit is that it's on us. You know, it's not my parents. If my parents had just been easier on me as a teen, you know, if my parents had just done this, and it's like, well, Benjamin, actually, if you had just gotten off your tail and gotten in the scripture more and discipled, you know, gotten into discipleship more and had gotten with all these great men, you know, Pastor, Brother Mitch, all these folks around here, you know, that really would have made a difference. So for anybody struggling with boys, I'm sorry, lots of prayer. If they feel like they can't relate to anybody and for some reason God puts it on your heart to send them my way, maybe we can talk, you know, I can talk about what a dummy I was and like, hey, maybe you might try kind of doing this, you know, but ultimately it's on what God's doing with that individual. But three, 4 years ago? Wow, I lost track. I'm already. Actually, this is where we're at now. We joke about we've only been married 2.5 years, but we feel like it's been 40 because we both have old people brains. it was early 2019. So finally, I had, for those of y'all that know the house dilemma, there was a lady I was with previously, thought she was a good Christian woman. I was a little delusional. God had to get a hold of me, and I, like I tell Lindsay, we talk about this now. I actually look back on this, and I'm not sorry as much as it stunk. But there was a point in life where I just hit rock bottom, and she ran out, and I had a house that I just bought, and I told the contractor, hey, just get in here and do this and do this under the house so we can fix the foundation while I come in later. And he has dug right up to the footers, for which anybody that knows construction, you don't disturb dirt near the footers because then your house, you know. So there I was several months into this. This gal ran out. Life just seemed to stink. I'm digging underneath my house that I'm living in right now. We're digging down there. And as I'm digging, more dirt's falling away from the footers. And there's a couple of points the posts fell out from the main support beam underneath. And, you know, by human standards and physics, it should have been on top of my head at any point. And like I said, I can only attribute it to divine intervention that it wasn't. And so it was about that time when I got to meet this wonderful lady. So I'll let you go into your part here.
Okay, great. So now we're going to rewind back to 1994. And I was born number 3 of 4 children. I beat out my twin sister by 4 minutes to get the title of number 3. My parents, Randy and Beth Walters, did everything they could to make us feel safe and loved. Like Sherry said last week, I wish every child could grow up in a home like I had, because it was an incredible blessing. They were pillar members of their church growing up. Mom and Dad always taught Sunday school classes, and Father led music, and Mother played the piano. We grew up in a home where learning was very important. It was prioritized. We were always encouraged to ask questions and investigate and discover, and learning was an exciting thing. And one of my favorite memories from all of my years growing up is that in the dining room, there was a bookcase behind Dad's seat, and almost at every meal, at some point, a question would be asked or a discussion would ensue, and Dad would turn and he would grab 2 books. He would grab his Bible and the dictionary, and he'd bring those over and he'd set them on the table, and it would get intense sometimes, but it was safe. It was a safe place that was provided for us, and I'm grateful for that. not only my immediate family, but our extended family as well. They were all God-loving, Christ-centered homes. And so I remember any time visiting aunts or uncles or cousins or grandparents, church was the priority on Sundays. And I really value that, and I appreciate that about the Kovach family. You know, it's, I never have to question if my kids are with their aunts or their uncles or another family member. You know, I know they're going to be hearing the truth, and I know that they're going to be taught to prioritize the things that truly matter eternally, and I'm grateful. At the age of 7, I was alone in my bedroom playing with my dolls and singing Victory in Jesus, and suddenly the words of the chorus made sense to me, and in that moment, I just actually understood the difference between me and everyone that I knew, because everyone that I knew was saved, but I was not. And the clarity of my own sin and selfishness and depravity suddenly became crystal clear. I just couldn't deny it. And because of the background that I'd had and the teaching that I'd received up to that point, I knew exactly in that moment what I needed to do. And so at the age of 7, alone in my room, I prayed and accepted the Lord into my heart. And because of that experience, an amazing gift that the Lord has given me is true assurance. I've truly never, ever doubted my salvation because it was not an emotional experience. It was not a manipulated experience. It was just me alone in my room, a 7-year-old girl. All my struggles have come since then on other things, but I've never doubted my salvation, and I don't have to, and you don't either. That's one of the greatest gifts that the Lord has given us, is the assurance of eternal security. And I'm sorry I sound like this. Also, I don't usually sound like a groveling smoker, but today I do. So, in my primary Sunday school class, I remember an illustration that my teacher showed us to demonstrate security of the believer. And she took a marshmallow and she had a shoe box full of charcoal. And she said, once you become a Christian, you're like this marshmallow. You are pure and white and you have no sin. You've been washed by the blood of Jesus. And the world is represented by this shoe box full of dark, dusty, grossness, just bad. And she said, you know, sometimes when we're not careful, we can slip away and we can get closer to the world than we are to Jesus. Even after we're saved, that can happen. And so she put this marshmallow in the shoebox and she shook it up and then she passed it around. We all shook it up, you know. We were probably 8 or 9 years old. And then at the end, she opened the shoebox and she pulled out the marshmallow and it was just covered in charcoal dust. It was black. And she said, you know, the closer we get to the world, the more we're going to look like this. But then she cut that marshmallow in half. And the inside was still pure white, like snow. And that was years ago, 20 years ago, but I've never forgotten that illustration of the security of the believer. But anyway, so you do that with your kids because it makes a difference. Okay. For me, being a Christian meant not doing bad things. It meant staying away from bad people and avoiding bad things, which is not wrong. But it's just a very immature and shallow understanding of the Christian life. But unfortunately, that understanding stayed with me for a long time. And so the result was I became pretty legalistic. I did not have a very good grasp on grace, on the grace that I'd received and the grace that I should have been offering to other people. It became more about, well, you don't meet my standards, so I'm not going to be with you. I'm not going to hang out with you. I'm not going to be your friend. I'm going to avoid you. Which, once again, isn't necessarily wrong, but the spirit about it is what can be wrong. And my spirit was wrong. And so one event that really changed our entire family's perspective was in 2011. It was spring break, and our family project was re-roofing our house. And mother got very, very sick. And she was literally up there on the roof, nailing in shingles. And she just got so sick that she almost fell off the roof. So we got her down. We got her inside. And dad decided to send her to the emergency room with my older sister because he was like, your mom's really sick. I don't know what's going on. Well, Audra came back, but mom wasn't with her. So she had been admitted to the emergency room. And turns out she was very sick. And it just literally hit her in that moment. But she had no immune system. She had absolutely nothing, no white blood cell count whatsoever. So she was immediately put into isolation, and the doctors ran some tests and basically called my dad and said, you need to prepare for her death. She's very near death, and at any point she could just fail. Her body could fail. And, you know, that was a crazy roller coaster to happen in just a few hours. You know, we were all working outside together as a family, and then suddenly Dad gets a phone call that he needs to gather us kids and we need to go to the hospital to say goodbye. I mean, it was unimaginable. But she's still alive, praise God. She was healed miraculously. But I remember in those moments that could have been a crisis, that could have been terrifying and stressful and just really awful for our family, my dad remained so strong. And he had such faith and resilience and peace. And not just my dad, but my mother too, even when she was sick in the hospital bed. And truly in that moment, I think I realized for the first time just how important it is for the home to have a godly leader and a godly father. And, you know, like Ben said, women and men, we are different, and we're supposed to be. And that's part of the confusion that we see in the world, is that men and women are acting like they're the same and being treated like they're the same, and we're not. And as a teenage girl at the age of 16, I saw what the godly leadership of a man can do for a family. And so I really value that and began to really take seriously the prospect of marriage at that age, because I didn't want to take it lightly. I saw other people dating, and it didn't look fun. It just looked kind of awful, actually. But so I saw a quote recently, actually, that kind of sums up how I began to feel about the next phase of my life. But it said, you get to choose your husband, but your children do not get to choose their father. So you need to choose wisely for them. And the same can be true for a man searching for a wife. So young people, be wise. Okay, so back to Lindsay just being a rule follower and being a jerk. Okay, I was in college working at Camp War Eagle, and it was the night that we all as counselors shared our testimony together, and so I volunteered to go first because I felt very confident, and I was like, well, I've done this 100 times. I can share about when I got saved, and I did. I went first and took about 30 seconds, and then we went on to the next person, and I didn't think anything of it. But at the end of the night, one of the leaders there came up to me, and she said, Lindsay, thank you for sharing about your salvation experience, but that was 15 years ago. You know, what's the Lord been doing in your life since then? And I literally had no answer. I had nothing to say, because in my very infantile understanding, I got saved when I was 7, and that was enough, and I didn't need to do anything else. All I had to do was just avoid bad things and bad people. So the Lord used that experience to really just wake me up and realize that if I'm going to have anything to share, I need to start going to Him and letting Him teach me and change me and shape me and mold me. And I had not been doing that up to that point in my life. So that was a turning point for me, and it was then that I feel like I truly began to surrender the small areas of my life, my expectations for my life, my hopes and my dreams, you know, allowing the Lord to change the desires of my heart and not just treating Him like a genie up in the sky that I get to cast my wishes on and He'll make everything come true. It really shifted at that point. So after college... we can wrap this up quickly. After college, I moved to Nashville, Tennessee, and started working as a substitute teacher, and really wanted to stay out there. Loved Nashville. It was a great city. It was exciting. It was new. It was fun. Well, then the reality of adulthood hit, and I realized I just needed a good job. There, hopefully, you'll reach that point where you realize, oh, I just really need to work. That's the best thing I can do for myself right now. So, the Lord saw fit to actually delay a job offer in Nashville just a few hours past a job offer back here in Arkansas. And truly, had the offer in Tennessee come first, I would have taken it and I never would have moved back here. But for whatever reason, I mean, I know the reason, but for whatever reason, he delayed that job offer just a few hours after I'd accepted one back here in Springdale. And after I got over the disappointment, you know, things began to become clear that that was the Lord. He was ordaining those steps and he was ensuring that I would make it back here to Northwest Arkansas. So the Kovacs family was actually not my first introduction to Mission Boulevard. My first introduction came through Gabe Smith. And I had met Gabe in college, and we'd become friends down in Russellville. And there was one weekend he was up here playing at an alumni game. And, you know, you're in college, and you have time and energy to just hang out with people. So Gabe texted me. He's like, hey, come hang out. And very unlike me today, I said, okay, sure, that sounds fun. And I came, and Gabe was playing basketball, and he introduced me to Crystal Osmond, just for fun. He just thought that would be cool for me to meet Crystal. And it was. I loved her. Her kids were hilarious. But that was it. We were here that night, met Crystal, met some of the kids, then left. Never thought about this place again. That was back in, like, probably 2013. Fast forward to 2019, I was still working full-time at Camp Warrigal and started volunteering at the Bible Club at Elmdale Elementary School. And I start meeting these amazing people like Kenny and Miss Mickey and Miss Edna Church and, oh, who else? Oh, so many people, Miss Chula. And then there's this Crystal lady that I see her from across the room and I think, she looks But, you know, it's that awkward conversation of, like, I think I know you, but it's also possible I don't. Well, one day I was just finally like, okay, I got to get this over with. So I walked up to her and said, I think we've met before, but I have no idea when, no idea where. Fill in the gaps, you know, help me. And she's like, no, I think you're right. I think you're right. Well, we became friends and finally realized when we had met years ago. And she kept dropping these subtle hints about her single...
Not so subtle.
Firefighting brother. But I'm not very good at picking up hints, so I was completely clueless. But one day she finally did arrange, unbeknownst to me, slightly knownst to him, she arranged that we would be here at a camp event for the school together. And I remember seeing him across the room and thinking, I hope he doesn't ask me for my phone number. because if he does, I'm not going to give it to him, and it's going to be so uncomfortable, and then I'm going to have to be friends with Crystal, but she's going to know that I told her brother no. So it was just this really awkward, uncomfortable thing. But thankfully, he didn't. So, young men, never be too desperate, because that played in his favor. So we ended up... a couple weeks, a couple months, I don't really remember how much further on it was, but I was invited by Crystal to come speak at an Awana night for the girls. The girls and boys had separated that night, and I came and spoke at their house, at the Kovacs house. And I remember walking in, and Benjamin met me at the door, and he took my things, and he was being such a gentleman. Wow, such a gentleman. And I walked in, and the million Kovacs that you all know were all scrunched in on George and Sherry's small side of that house. And they were eating tacos, and there were just people everywhere. I mean, they were spilling out of closets. It was just crazy. And I just loved it. I remember feeling so content and so happy and amazed. And the night went really great, and it was awesome and fun. We interacted very little, but I went to work the next day, and I told my friend at work, I said, Enoch, this is going to sound crazy, but I've met my future in-laws. I literally know the family that I'm going to belong to someday. And we hadn't even been on a date yet, but it was just that clear after that night. I thought, man, Lord, you've just, like, talk about a sign. Like, I almost changed my last name the next day because I just knew. But yeah, so here we are. you want to fill in any blanks.
Yeah, so I was, for context, for the first meeting, yeah, so Crystal had mentioned before, hey, I know this gal, but you probably won't really like her. She likes kids a lot. I'm like, what do you think I am, some kind of kid-hating ogre? I don't know. I've been working in Awana's for 5 years at this point, or however long it is. Maybe I just came across that disgruntled. I don't know, whatever. But so she's kind of dropping in. She's like, hey, I need you to come over and help set up for this this gal from Camp Wurgle. Is kind of, I'm like, oh, no. You can just tell with Crystal. She's the subtle hints are not so subtle, okay? So I'm like, no. I had just, like I said, we'd just gone through this house mess. I had just lost this gal, you know, and everything. And I was just, I had actually reached the point, I think, couldn't have been more than a couple weeks to a month prior to this, where I'd said, Lord, I'm done looking. I'm done. I'm just, you know what? Which, of course, in hindsight, if I'd done that years ago, you know, what could he have done? You know, it's a. But I finally gave up and, like, actually turned it over to him, you know. And amazing how it works after that. Because then Crystal does this little finagling of hers, right? And so I'm like, you know what? I'm not even going to try to impress this gal. So I put on some ratty old, I think they had holes all over jeans. I don't even know. But then the shirt, I think, was what got her. I put on my best shirt possible. So I think it was just a plain black shirt. And was it the me, sarcastic? Never.
Yeah.
Shirt, yeah. That's all I said. That's a kind of question. Me, sarcastic? Never. So, like I said, dressing to impress, right? And that's about the attitude I went over with. I'm like, I'm going to nip this in the bud real quick, all right? And we'll get Crystal to just back off in her little corner somewhere. And then I see this gal, and I'm like, okay, well, maybe I judged prematurely. But so then I start talking to her, but very unusual for me. I mean, not that I was just some incredible ladies' man, but, you know, I see a cute girl. I'm going to go talk to her, maybe try to get her number, this, that, and the other. But I just felt like there's this little, no, don't do that. You know, and I couldn't explain it other than this is just a God thing. You know, it's like, no, don't ask for a number. So I didn't ask for a number. And that second meeting she's talking about at the house, that's another one of those things. I just felt like, hey, you know, go be nice, be chivalrous, open the door, do this, that, and the other. Like, you've been trained, you know, because I had good parents that taught me that stuff. But then, again, very unusual. Like, I kind of wanted to stay and talk to her, but then I just felt like I just needed to go. And so I went and helped with the other part of Awana's. And, yeah, so those are the couple little things I had there.
It was the best thing you could have done.
Yeah.
I wanted to end with just talking a little bit about what Mission Boulevard means to me and what transpired right after we got married. And we have 2 minutes and we can do it. Okay. So just a few weeks after we got married, Ben did get deployed overseas, and he was gone for 10 months. And I was living in the basement that was only a basement for 2 months at that point, under a crumbling house. And it was just a really scary time for me personally. And I remember Brad Jones, months ago, it may have even been over a year ago, he talked about a time in his 30s where he experienced some severe depression. And he didn't really understand what was going on and why it was happening. He had never struggled with that before. And then when the Lord brought him out of it, looking back, he realizes that it's a tool that the Lord used to teach him empathy, to teach him how to relate to people who have struggled with that, because before then he never could. And that's what our first 2 years of marriage actually did for me. But it was with anxiety. I had never in my life, truly never, experienced anxiousness or severe worry, or just crippling anxiety. And during those 2 years, I did pretty frequently. And it's that feeling that the Lord is stretching you and pushing you beyond what you can bear. And that's because that's true. That's exactly what he's doing, because he wants to show us that we need him. Our need for him is greater than we can even describe. And it's that great every single day, not just the days that are really tough, but every single day. But during that time, it was COVID. The pandemic had hit. So we weren't having normal church services. But Mission Boulevard was an incredible ministry to me during that time. And that ministry came through John and Lynn McLarty and hiring me to do some work at their house. But that turned into a concept study that was happening every week. And, you know, they could have very easily, in the middle of a pandemic, said, well, we don't feel comfortable. We don't feel safe. We'll just do this when everything settles down. But I was desperate. I don't know if y'all realize how desperate I was. Maybe you did. But I was desperate for fellowship, and I was desperate for company, because I was extremely lonely. And even though church wasn't happening in 6 services a week here at this building, it was very much happening in other places during that time. And, you know, we're entering a time where that might be the case until the Lord comes back, where we might have to go back into that form of church, where we are meeting in each other's homes and just discipling in everyday relationships. And anyway, that greatly ministered to me. And also, we continue to have our Tuesday night Bible study led by Doug Francis and hosted at the Kovach House. And that group was an incredible ministry to me during that really, really rough time. And even though church looked different that year, those months, because of what was happening, the Lord was present. And he was still changing hearts and changing lives. And we don't have to fear that just because society starts to shift or circumstances start to change, the Lord never will. And I experienced that during the pandemic and during our sad start to marriage apart. But man, the Lord gives good gifts. And we've both experienced that, and I'm finally done. So if you want to finish. Sorry, that took 5 minutes. I'm sorry.
Oh, well, 5 minutes. Well,
I'm sorry.
So speaking of good gifts, I think I heard my parents almost spilled the beans a week ago. So we'll just go ahead and throw it out there. They do have 13 grandchildren now, because the 13th is right here. So, and that's the last thing we have. That's the last thing we have.
We're glad you joined us for our services here at Mission Boulevard Baptist Church. We look forward to having you join us again online, but you are always welcome to personally attend any of our services at the Mission Boulevard Baptist Church here in Fayetteville, Arkansas.